Right now, it is time to bring in Arthur Schwartz of the Food Maven. Arthur, of course, joins us on a Monday morning. We rebroadcast on the weekend and also during the week. And ladies and gentlemen, let's bring him in right now. Good morning, Arthur.
Good morning. And it's 40 degrees. How nice. And it'll warm up yet.
That's right.
But we it was interesting. Last night on the news, I noticed that all the daffodils were blooming around the White House. So it's coming.
I'll know it's coming.
They're 2 weeks ahead of New York, and New York is 2 weeks ahead of Sharon.
I know it's going to be springtime when the forsythia blooms. Once that blooms here,
of course,
then we
know. I used to track it. I had enormous bank of forsythia in front of my house in West Cornwall. In fact, it's probably there. That's there, but there was so much, I didn't want to destroy it. I dug it up, and I planted it on the other side of River Road, where it did take, well, you know, forsythia takes easily.
Yeah.
So actually, I should come up and take a look. The earliest it ever bloomed, I believe, was the first week in April. Second week in April, it should be in bloom. Anyway, well, I'm not blooming here. You know, this to me, as a food season, by the way, is terrible. You're sick of everything from the winter, and you're ready for spring things, but they're not here. And, you know, there's signs of spring, but not in the supermarket. Well, you can get asparagus from Peru. if that makes you feel like it's spring, go in good health. I'm going to wait a little while longer for something a little bit more local than Peruvian asparagus. But I've been so busy editing, let's use this word, or curating, that's a nice word, my cookbook collection so that I can dispose of a large number of cookbooks. That I haven't been cooking all that much. I do really simple things that don't take any time, because I'm not reading all the cookbooks I'm disposing of. But as I'm picking things off the shelf, I am finding, you know, things I forgot about and really was fond of at one time. I'm following the Marie Kondo rule. Have you watched Marie Kondo or know about Marie Kondo?
No.
She is a Japanese woman who wrote a book in English. I don't know how that is because she doesn't speak English, called Tidying Up. I guess it was translated. It's a best-selling book. And she gives you her method for tidying up, which basically means throwing out a lot of stuff. And if something, in her words, sparks joy in you, then you keep it. And if it doesn't spark joy, maybe it did at one time, there's no need to keep it anymore. And you thank it, and you appreciate it for what it gave you at one time, and then you dispose of it. So that's the method I'm using with my cookbooks. It's not a good method necessarily all the time, because, for instance, well, let me start with, I found a cookbook dealer, if anybody's coming to Brooklyn, and wants to have a very nice Brooklyn neighborhood experience, go to Lizzie Young's bookstore. I'll give you the directions later, which is in Cobble Hill. And around the corner, about three blocks down on Henry Street, is the famous Lucali Pizzeria. And it's just a beautiful little area to walk around. In fact, even though I always boast that I know every street in Brooklyn, I don't really. And I found a street I never heard of called Strong Place. And on Strong, and I mentioned to Lizzie, the cookbook dealer, by the way, super charming little store. The reason I'm not telling you the street is I have a block against the name of the street, but I'll remember it, believe me. It's a charming little store, a real throwback kind of thing with French doors out to the street. Super charming. Anyway, as is Lizzie herself. On Strong Place, where I parked, I went into the store and I said, oh, Lizzie, that's such a nice street, one block street. She said, oh, yeah, and it's becoming sort of like a mini Hollywood. I said, what do you mean? She said, well, Rachel Weisz and Daniel Craig bought a house there. It's still being renovated. By the way, I had parked in front of this house, this big house that's being renovated. Who knew that they were even married, Rachel Weisz and Daniel Craig, the new James Bond, but they live in Brooklyn. Anyway, back to the cookbook. So, you know, it's hard to sell books these days. Everybody thinks everything is on the Internet, and what do you need a book for? On the other hand, somehow cookbook sales, new cookbook sales, are up. At the same time, that nobody wants old cookbooks, and I don't even know what you call old anymore. So, but new cookbooks are generated by TV shows, famous restaurants, like that. The content is not necessarily aimed at the home cooking audience. And I have disposed of almost every book like that that I have, although those are really hard to get rid of. Nobody wants... If you look, there's a very famous chef who likes to claim he was the original chef, he sort of was, at Chez Panisse in Berkeley, Jeremiah Tower. And I looked at his book. It's a beautiful book, but there isn't one recipe that I saw that I would even think about attempting. In any case, and also the ingredients are so expensive. But I am finding gems. Anyway, so Lizzie has been calling for subject by subject. First she said, I could use some Asian books, meaning Chinese, Japanese, and Southeast Asian, as well as South Asian, meaning India, Pakistan, Nepal, and Tibet. I have books on every one of those. And in fact, I'm figuring it's at least 3 feet of bookshelf devoted just to Chinese and Chinese-American cookbooks. And Indian, I have a lot of Indian. I've saved quite a few. So one rule I had was I wasn't going to dispose of any books written by friends. Well, it ends up I have too many cookbook writer friends, and they all wrote too many cookbooks. So in the end, I have to give a few away. Yesterday, I gave my... But I only placed them in good homes. So my godson, Max Gross, was here yesterday, and he took... a precious baking book for his wife Jane, who loves to bake, written by a friend named Greg Patent, and it's a fairly new book. I'm sure you can find it on Amazon. As one of my cookbook writing friends says, we will live forever on Amazon. Thank God for Amazon, because otherwise you would have no access to these things. And on eBay, I've looked up a lot of my books on eBay, to think maybe I should be selling them on eBay. You know, what Lizzie's giving me nearly as much as I could get on eBay, and I don't have to mail it. I don't have to charge extra for postage, which makes the book more expensive. Big books, very expensive. So the first was, yeah, so I've gotten rid of a lot of that stuff. Yesterday I also gave Max one book by my friend Eileen Yin Fai Lo. Eileen, who lives in New Jersey and I think is fine, well, she's about my age, could be a little older. She's married to a man who I know is a little, maybe more than a little older, Fred Ferretti, who many, many years ago was the food critic for Gourmet, he did work for Gourmet, but he also maybe it was just Gourmet. I was going to say the New Yorker. In any case, Fred was and the New York Times he worked for. So Eileen has written quite a few books, but I knew I was not. We were off to go for dim sum yesterday, so I gave Max her dim sum book. I know I am not going to be making my own dim sum. It's a nice book to read through, so you can go to a dim sum parlor and identify dim sum. But Max was appreciative of that one. But I think I'm going to have to part with more of Eileen Yin Fai Lo because I have a lot of her. I also have an enormous number of books I've discovered. I don't have all of them, by Madhur Jaffrey.
Ooh.
Do you know Madhur?
Well,
she lives nearby. She lives near Sharon.
Oh, I didn't know that she lived nearby. I just always knew that if you wanted an Indian cookbook, that was your go-to.
Very reliable, extremely reliable. She's also an extremely reliable and great actress.
Right.
Not just...
Does anyone remember Merchant Ivory?
Only a food writer, but also a great actress. And I just rewatched Cotton Mary, which is about an Anglo-Indian woman. It's about an Anglo-Indian woman in India. It's an interesting movie. She doesn't play a very nice character, so... Bob keeps saying, let's not talk about that movie. It's a great performance of a lovely, lovely person playing a not lovely person. So we know she's a great actress because she's very believable in this movie. Anyway, one of the chief things I am saving, besides Madhur Jaffrey's World Vegetarian, which is not just South Asian food, I am keeping my Indian vegetarian books. The Indian cuisines, the cuisines of India have an enormous amount to contribute to world vegetarianism. The Art of Indian Vegetarian Cooking by a woman named Yamuna Devi, I'm keeping her. I'm keeping Julie Sani's Classic Indian Vegetarian and Grain Cooking. And here's a book I didn't know I had until I started going through everything. And if you ever, I don't know if you're interested, but it's vegetarian cooking from the Silk Road. Actually, it's called Silk Road Cooking, A Vegetarian Journey. It's by she's an Iranian woman who lives in Washington, D.C. I am not going to pronounce her name correctly. It's a tough one, but I'm going to try. Najmia Batmangich.
That was good.
J. Pardon me?
I said that was good.
Well, I don't know if it was good or not. It's a big, fancy book with lots of beautiful color photographs, but so many recipes that I am going to actually make, like Gujarati carrot and yogurt soup. Of course, everything has very exotic seasonings, which I don't necessarily keep in my cupboard, but there are also plenty of things here that with things that you can't keep in your cupboard. Anyway, I'm interested in these cuisines because we have quite a few now, what you would have to say, Silk Road restaurants here in Brooklyn. Uzbeki, Tajikistani, Azerbaijani, all these people were part of their countries were part of the Soviet Union at one time. So they have migrated here and settled in what used to be largely Russian-Ukrainian territory, but is now more Central Asian than anything.
And you have a fair number of restaurants.
Yes, we do.
There. So that right. Kind of makes it interesting, too.
Yeah, because... and also not necessary for me to cook it, except that I find myself cooking more and more vegetarian food, because not because I eschew meat. I don't at all. I have to go to the butcher to get meat. That's a good thing, because I don't get it every day. If I bought meat around the corner, I might be eating more meat. But it's good. I can buy good chicken in the supermarket. And can't get good meat in the supermarket. At least not up to my standard. So I do find myself cooking vegetarian. I made something the other night, I keep saying, you put an egg on top and it's dinner. And that's a very current mode of eating. Young people like all these different things with just a fried egg on top, or in the ramen places, a poached egg on top. So it's cooked in the liquid. But I made, and anybody can do this, and you could season this any which way, but I had a lot of carrots in the house, and I had oranges that needed to be eaten. So I literally shredded the carrot on the coarse side of my box grater, 4 carrots for 2 people, and 1 tablespoon of butter. This is not vegan. If you want to make it vegan, then use oil. I'm not big on vegan. I like my dairy products and eggs. And that's it. And then the 2 oranges, which were navel oranges, I cut up into pieces. And I put that in the pan with the carrot after I tossed the carrot around for a minute or two. I covered the pan, and let the moisture of the oranges cook the carrots. Boy, was that good. And as I said, you could have that with the fried eggs on top. Back to my cookbooks.
No, quick
next
digression.
Category. Pardon me?
Quick digression, because you know food, and I encountered this in a book, not a cookbook, all right? Have you ever made what's called a bread sauce, which is actually a cream gravy with bread?
Yes, panade, I would call it.
All right.
Yeah, where you're using dry bread, or even fresh bread for that matter.
All right, so my question around that is, speaking of vegan or whatnot, has anyone ever made it with either water or broth? Instead of milk?
Yeah, why not?
Okay.
Water is not very exciting.
I understand.
It moistens things, but you would have to have a lot of other seasoning in there if you want to make it vegan, for instance.
No, if you wanted to make it non-milky, because if you were Jill. No, so I was just curious, because it seemed to me that you could do it.
For sure. Broth is nice if you use vegetable broth. Water is, it's going to be soaked bread with water. I mean, that doesn't taste like anything.
Yeah, but you could season up the water.
You could always saute some garlic.
Yeah.
But you don't like that very much either.
No, but you could, you could always tart up the water. I have done that numerous times.
You can what?
Tart up the water.
Of course you can.
Wondered if there was any...
I'm not sure why you're bothering to do this.
It was more curiosity than anything else. The notion seemed okay. I just wondered if it could be done without milk.
Yeah, why not? I used to make, in fact, I think this is actually in my cookbook. I'm going to look in What to Cook. There's a recipe. It's not bread sauce, but bread soup. And it's made with, like you say, a panade. I think this is it. With onion or garlic or whatever you have. Yeah, here we go. 6 slices of firm or even stale white bread, preferably made without sugar, I say,
right,
which is 99%. Well, these days, this book was written 30 years ago, these days it's easier to find that product. And then this is milk. And if you used water instead... it would still be good. This is going to be very good. This calls for both milk and broth.
Okay.
And then, but the whole point of this soup is not the milk and the broth. It's the onions or garlic. A cup of chopped shallots or 10 cloves of garlic, coarsely chopped, or 1.5 cups coarsely chopped leek or onion, or a combination. Remember, this is what to cook when you think there's nothing in the house to eat. So, you always have some kind of stale, I always do have some kind of stale bread. Anyway, back to my cookbooks. This is funny. So, the second category, I brought her all those Asian books. And then she said, okay, I'm looking for weirdo countries. I said, what do you mean, weirdo countries? She said, cuisines that you never hear about. Well, it ends up, I had so many of these, who knew? They were all published by a company called Hippocrene Press. And Hippocrene did, I think, a job that needed to be done at the time, which was, I guess, the 80s into the 90s, when a lot of serious cookbooks were written about, countries, about cuisines, that when the world was becoming more worldly. And I had, for instance, the cuisine of Nepal, Burma, Malta. The one that Lizzie got a real kick out of was I had Finland, that she loved Finland. I had Albania, Bulgaria, countries that don't usually have cookbooks written about them. In fact, you could lump a lot of these together. In any case, Hippocrene hired people who really knew these cuisines in the sense that they cooked it. They were home. A lot of them were home cooks, not writers. Hence, the recipes are not so reliable. But it's interesting to see what they are. And I'm thinking, do I really want to part with all this? I mean, what happens if I'm suddenly discover a Nepalese restaurant.
I know, Brooklyn. And you want to.
Or somebody says, oh, let's go to Nepal. And I say, oh, I've never been there. I'll go there. But let me do some research about the food, and I won't have a book. So I tested this theory that everything you need to know is on the Internet, and sure enough, everything I needed to know about Nepalese cuisine is on the Internet.
All right, so from a reliable source.
Take up shelf space. Pardon me?
Okay, it's as long as it's from a reliable, as long as you know.
Well, I don't know. I'll guarantee you that this cookbook was not reliable.
Okay.
So, you know, I don't think this is any less reliable.
That's
I can tell by reading a recipe whether it's reliable or not, whether I want to attempt it. Sometimes you'll just look at a cookbook for inspiration and you don't actually follow a recipe.
Right.
Which, you know, I mean, I like my cookbooks for that, too. But sometimes you want to follow a recipe. So this morning I was making a decision. It took me a good 20 minutes after pulling it off the shelf. I have a book called The White House Cookbook. And The White House Cookbook has nothing to do with the White House. It's just a late 19th century American cookbook, famous book. I have a 1930-something edition that's falling apart. So it's actually not worth anything. No book collector wants that. I don't want that. Actually, it keeps shedding paper, so I really don't want it. But I thought, well, maybe I should be keeping this for historical interest. And then maybe one day I'll want to. No, the recipes are terrible. I could tell just by glancing at a few. I just opened a page randomly and read a recipe that called for a half a cup of yeast. I'm sorry.
Right.
Half a cup of yeast is enough yeast to for
raise the Titanic.
Yeah. So, and then there were other, you know, rub in one, they had like 2 cups of flour and rub in 1 tablespoon of butter. Whoever heard of that? That's not even going anywhere. It's going in the garbage because it's falling apart and shedding. But it was an interesting process to weed out all these weirdo countries. And in the process this morning of looking to see about, oh yeah, what was here about Nepalese cooking, and sure enough, it was a lot. There are 3 Nepalese restaurants in New York City. One of them in Brooklyn, and one in Manhattan, and one in Queens. Queens, I expected. Actually, the one in Brooklyn is really in Queens, but it's on the border. So it's not in Jackson Heights where you expect it to be. The other thing about Nepalese, just like May, is I know this sounds weird, but the cashiers, for a long period, the cashiers at the Korean-owned grocery near me here, my local Korean-owned grocery, were all from Nepal. They were beautiful young women, dark hair, striking eyes. They were all beautiful young women. And I had the nerve one day to say, where are you all from? You know, you all look, you know, ethnically similar, and I can tell you're not Korean. She said, oh, we're all from Nepal. And by the way, they all spoke beautifully, too. Ends up, there are a lot of students here from Nepal. And I said, how do you happen to just find each other here in a Korean-owned store? She said, oh, there's an agency that places us. And I guess maybe these young women graduated because I haven't seen them in a good 6 months. But they were in the store for about a year. And so anyway, I could always go to to somebody from Nepal and ask them about Nepalese food. I really have to get rid of books. So now the next subject area was single subjects. I said, Lizzie, what? I mean, everything is a single subject after all. She says, you know what I mean. I said, well, I know I have at least 3 to 5 feet of shelf space devoted to vegetables from apples and produce from apples to zucchini. Sure enough, I was able to dispose of a good deal of those books. I don't really need a specialized book on avocado.
In the land of avocado toast, you do.
Well, I don't need a cookbook on my shelf.
I'm joking.
I know how to make avocado toast. Who doesn't know how to make avocado toast? You make toast and you smash an avocado on it. And then you top it with whatever you want to top it with. Why people go to a restaurant to eat that, I don't know. I guess it's nice cafe food. And at least where I live, there's a very, very strong cafe culture. You know, young people who who stay in cafes all day with their laptops and eat avocado toast. I happen to love avocado toast. Do you like avocado toast?
I don't eat it that often, but I smash my own avocados, thank you very much.
Yeah, yeah. So I like mine topped with in the winter anyway, chopped cherry tomatoes and feta cheese.
Why not?
It's delicious.
Take an avocado, smash
very,
it.
A very healthy meal.
When we lived
two
in...
big slices of whole grain bread with toasted with avocado, da-da-da-da-da, is a very healthy meal as well.
Oh.
Maybe we'll eat that for lunch today. Come to think of it. Oh, wasn't there some avocado scare that I hear about?
Possibly.
This morning on the news.
Oh, really? I missed that. I'm still reeling from the Wall Street Journal saying that eggs are potentially dangerous again.
What?
I saw the... Yeah, you know how every 25 years eggs are suddenly the devil.
Well, salmonella.
It wasn't for salmonella. It was just they're not good for you. Like, okay.
Oh, they're not good for you?
No, I've just lived too long because I remember being 20 and seeing that article.
Yeah, we lived too long. Exactly. This is the third time they
exactly.
Good for you.
It's like, all right. You know, then
every
they're rehabilitated.
Years, right.
And then.
Well, I remember it was not just that they were unhealthy. Remember, there was, in fact, I guess in the 80s, a problem with salmonella.
But that's different.
Eggs. I agree. That's different. Yeah. And this, by the way, everybody, is the beginning of egg season. Meaning, with longer days, the chickens lay more eggs. Of course, most chickens are grown under artificial light, so they don't know it's days are longer. They want the chickens to lay in February the way they lay in May. But chickens that are raised outside, as many are these days, do know the difference. And so, the price of eggs usually goes down around now. Easter, of course, is about eggs. Passover is about eggs. And they're both only, what, 3 weeks away?
Yep.
You know, my life was about eggs. I lived on a chicken farm. We ate eggs all the time.
That's right. You were on a chicken
farm. Everybody lived to be 90 years old.
It's just all right. You didn't remember the Wall Street Journal.
We eat eggs here as a meal. I mean, I don't just cook with them, but we like eggs as a meal. And if you looked at... three large eggs. I don't think the nutritional profile is any worse than a piece of meat, a piece of red meat.
Listen, I just want to say before we wind up that you're absolutely right. There is an avocado. It's Listeria, and it's a 6-state bulk avocado recall.
One state was New Hampshire.
California, Arizona, Florida, Wisconsin, North Carolina, and New Hampshire.
Yeah.
We're
safe in Connecticut.
Right. Recall covers conventional and organic avocados grown and packed in California.
All right.
So just be aware.
I want to add that it's very often these problems are with organic products.
In addition, that's as someone with a brother who is in the organic business, it doesn't protect you from what causes these things.
Yeah. All right.
Well, my next category to attack, apparently nobody wants my Mediterranean and Middle Eastern books, but my American category here is I have too many editions of The Joy of Cooking and The Better Homes and Garden cookbook, and they take up a lot of shelf space. So I got to find a taker for these old editions. So anyway, have a great week, everybody. By next week, I'll be down another 50 books or so.
Okay. Good luck. Love to Bob. Thank you.
Take care.
Take care. Arthur Schwartz, the food maven here on Robin Hood Radio. Turning or burning the page, as we might have it. You can hear Arthur Monday through Friday here on The Breakfast Club. Monday on The Breakfast Club, and then rebroadcast on the weekends, and I do believe it's
Thursday.
Thursday at noontime?
Yep.
Right after the noontime news. Arthur Schwartz, the food maven here on Robin Hood Radio.